Hello, welcome everybody to episode 12 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob.
I'm Tom.
And once again, joining us today is John of Dirty Harry Podcast. Welcome back, John.
Hello, thank you guys for having me again.
Well, we had such a fun time yesterday, we figured we'll have you one more day. We'll see how the rest of the week goes. We'll take it one day at a time.
Probation, or I'll get cooler. Okay, thank you. I'll be good.
We'll put you cooler in the cooler. So this episode, episode 12, starts with continues the conversation between Henley and Werner, and goes all the way till Hilt's taking a few steps back and putting in so that he's up against the barracks while he's looking out at the security fence. As we discussed yesterday, there's a whole conversation between Werner and Henley. Where they're talking, where the conversation starts off at a point where Werner thinks that he needs to send Henley to the cooler, and then he finds out he's an American, and it's like, oh, now I want to be your best friend. For some reason, he believes that Americans should be friendlier with Germany than with Great Britain at that time. So I love the way that this minute starts, where Henley's response is, enemy? What are you talking about? So he goes, oh, in the War of 1812... they burnt your capital down. Obviously, no, he says in 1812. He doesn't even say the War of 1812. He says in 1812. And the truth is it happened in 1814.
Would most Americans know that?
Probably not. No. But it happened during the War of 1812.
I was going to say, most would be able to tell you it's the War of 1812, specifically when in that war, less so.
Correct.
As a non-American, was that Washington a cherry tree or... something about packing up it's way after Washington, isn't it?
Washington was already dead at that point.
Yeah.
It was Madison was in the White House at the time. Madison or Monroe? Madison.
James Madison was in 1812.
So they came and, burned down the White House. We're not going to get political.
We won't. No.
Especially given recent events of the last few months.
Especially considering neither of you live in the United States.
I have an accent and I still get to vote, so, and I've been American longer than you.
I like Werner's rationale for, like, it being the truth, though. He's like, Garner says it's propaganda, and it's like, it's in the history books. And he goes, I read it, it's true. That's the definition of propaganda, my friend.
Exactly. Well, but especially when you're dealing with Nazism, where they changed history.
Well, but the question...
to suit themselves.
Right, but how old is Werner supposed to be? Because, I mean, I don't
early
know.
20s?
They call him a kid. At some point, later on, Henley calls him a kid, even though he's not a kid. I think he goes, that's a mixed-up kid.
Right.
In the novel, they mention one of the dimmest ferrets. They call him Dopey. I don't know if that's who he's modeled on. But he has a bit of a Hogan's Hero type vibe later on in the film, doesn't he?
Yeah, completely. Yeah. There's no question about that. Even though Schultz in Hogan's Heroes is a little is better than he is.
Well, the only reason I say that is depending on when he was in those history classes. If he was in there pre-World War I or even during World War I, I mean, it's, yes, the United States and Britain weren't, at war with each other leading up to World War I, but it's not like they were best of friends after the War of 1812 either. So there is some look of maybe they were enemies, but then obviously World War I, we ended up sided with them. Maybe there's just a level of that too going on. Or maybe I'm giving Werner the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I
say
got
he's in his
out.
Early 20s.
Okay, he's supposed to be in his early 20s, but the actor was 38 or 39 at the time. And the irony of it is that Garner is years younger. So later on when Garner says that there's a mixed up kid or a crazy mixed up kid, he's talking about someone who's 5 years older than him. So that's it's pretty funny. Yeah. So I'm not sure of how old he's supposed to be. I mean, they make it seem as if he's supposed to be like a teen or just, not long out of high school, but when you look at him, he doesn't look like he's in his 20s. He does look like he's in his 30s, late 30s, if not even more.
Right. He looks mid-30s, too. I mean, I would guess mid-30s at the youngest. But
yeah, right. But, I mean, we call him dim-witted, but immediately afterwards, he shoos Garner away, And then what does he do? He looks in the cab just to make sure he didn't steal anything.
Or he's checking to see if there's anything he wants to steal.
Maybe. He's like, where are the keys? I'm going to go take this for a little joyride.
And the music turns like into a little bit of a comic resolution. Like it becomes really lighthearted, the music there. And yeah, really great piece of the score.
Yeah, no question. See, that's the problem with the score. You can't really talk about it in this movie because every single minute has the score. I'm sure that someone could do a show just talking about the score of this entire movie, you know, minute by minute.
I've got a quote for you guys. The soundtrack is, pardon my American accent, rousing militaristic motifs with interludes of warmer, softer themes that humanize the prisoners and endear audiences. End quote.
That pretty good American accent.
Hey, I love the music in this.
Yeah, it's a catchy theme. I mean, it's something from the first time you see the movie, you can get it caught in your mind. It's not like Colonel Bogey.
No.
You know, that... that's a little more, but Colonel Bogey is just Colonel Bogey. This movie, you have everything going the whole way. I mean, we have a guest much later on in the season. I think she's got one of the last few weeks where she's a PhD in music, so she wants to talk about the music aspects of the movie. So we'll hopefully get some really great insight from her about it. Okay, so then the scene shifts and we get to see Steve. You know, we saw him last week for a few seconds when he's just looking around at the compound and the security of everything. And here we see him walking along the perimeter, looking out to see what he can, just check everything out, take it all in. Something that I've mentioned numerous times, there's so many background actors, just people walking around. And if you look closely, you'll see that most of them are walking in groups of, they're either walking by themselves or walking in groups of twos. So they basically got all the extras and told them, okay, just walk around. You know, here's the whole camp. Walk around however you want. Just make it seem as natural as possible. But what's interesting, again, is you can see the different things that all these different characters are carrying in the background. Some of them aren't carrying anything. So there's one who just has a cup that's hanging from his belt. Some of them have blankets, sleeping bags, whatever. But Hiltz, what does he have? He has an American, bag. That, again, I'm curious to know how he, jumped out of his airplane and was able to keep this with him and have no one ever take it from him. Because we know it's his because of the fact that later on we'll be able to see that his name and serial number are stamped on it. And then someone runs up and starts talking to him. Calls him by his first name. Oh, really annoys him. Calls him Virgil. And so now we get to know that his name is Virgil. We didn't know. We just know he's Steve McQueen up until now. And then I love the first comment. Did you see the cooler? Meaning that anyone who knows Hiltz knows that that's where he spends most of his days. This isn't something new in this camp.
This is the first day, isn't it? This is still the first hour or so, we're led to believe. And they haven't had a roll call or anything. They haven't. They're just allowed to,
This is like literally. Seven of them being in the camp.
Right.
Yeah, they're there not very long so far.
One thinks they'd be forced to do a roll call first of all or something, but just allowed a bit of free time as soon as they've come there.
Well, from what we understand, as we discussed yesterday, this is summer camp. They have tons of free time.
Of course, this is a great set, isn't it, filmed in the suburbs of Munich. Did you guys know where in Munich it was filmed?
I used to know. I mean, one of our guests in a few weeks is actually someone who went on a pilgrimage to visit all the sites where the movie was made and where the and where the actual events took place. So I read all of his stuff, so I'm familiar with it, but I don't remember the name of the place. So why don't you fill everyone in? What is it?
Well, I'm in my late 30s, but I still remember a lot of my school childhood German from high school. I looked into the suburb, this Bavaria Film Studios, and it was filmed. I think the film studio was still in a suburb called Gesellgesteig, which has a horrible translation as hostage track or hostage way.
That actually makes perfect sense for this movie.
What a bit of irony. Horrible. Yeah. A bit of synchronicity, yeah. Geiselgesteig, apologies for the pronunciation, but literally means way or hostage track or trail.
Wow. Very interesting.
What's the trivia in Trivial? Sorry about that interjection. But yeah, I thought that was funny.
No, that's great. That's great. So, Goff, so we find out that the name of this other American character, we find out later on his name is Goff.
Looks like he's missing from MASH. It looks like he should be in MASH.
Could be. Could be. We'll have to ask Turney about that when she's on next week. No, wait, not next week. No, she's on in a few weeks, so we'll have to ask her about it. But that's a good point. We'll have to keep that. Tom, write that down. We have to remember to ask her if she thinks that Goff is a long-lost character from MASH. But he continues his annoying conversation with Hiltz. Hiltz seems to be you can see his mind is working. He's trying to figure out how do I get out of this place or whatever. And he just has someone coming along and annoying him with strange questions, saying, oh, I can't find those two guys that were with us in Hut 14. And Hiltz is basically saying, I don't really care. Stop bothering me.
So, and yet, although he's annoying him, Hiltz knows the details. He remembers those two people, Dexter and whoever.
Jackson and Dexter.
Jackson.
So I'm going to burn a note I have for later in the week. Is Goff basically Milhouse from The Simpsons?
Could be.
It's a very interesting point. It's very possible.
Well, he has
It's that Milhouse is based on Goff.
They just strike me as the same character of the awkward guy running over to the cool kid and just be like, hey, so, there's this thing, yeah, let's do this thing. And the cool kid's just like, yeah, okay, you need to go away. Let me do my thing now.
Right. I can imagine Goff, loving the milk in the... in the canteen. Wow, this is great milk. Hiltz is great milk.
No, but his next line, Goff's next line is great. It just accentuates the point that you guys just said. He says, I'm going to go see what else I can find. Again, he's in summer camp. You know, his friends were in my bunk, last year that I didn't see. So let's try and see them again. So he makes it sound like he's more on an adventure than a prison, but maybe that's just his way of dealing with the fact that he's in a prison camp. You know, let's make it seem a occurrence. Let's make it seem as if everything's fun.
So the other thing I really like that they're able to do in this minute is we still get the towers, the fence, all of that still looks very ominous. You know, we get Hiltz, stopping the... Once Goff runs away, he's checking everything out, and you see him looking up at the guard towers and the fence, and it's still, it looks imposing, and how do we get out of here?
No, it's not how do we get out of here, it's how do I get out of here.
That's the royal we.
When it has those close-ups of the goon boxes, the music... once again, I can't describe what the music does. It sounds like desert music. Sounds like it's from Lawrence of Arabia, like this imposing desert or this big obstacle they're going to face. It's very effective, those two shots of the goon boxes.
Right. I mentioned this last week that I love the fact that then the guards are actually close to their guns.
Yeah.
So the guards are awesome. Everyone's been here 20 minutes, so I guess they can still try and guard the same way they've been guarding for the last few weeks while they were building them.
They're not on their guns, but they look like they're paying attention to what's going on down there. They still look imposing, and part of that is the way the camera shot. We're looking up at our tower still.
Okay, but one of the guards actually... taps his fingers as if he's bored. He's like, okay, try to run. I'm bored. If you look in second 49.
Yeah, he taps his
hands there. Now, did either of you notice what's on the ground throughout Hiltz's stroll?
You mean the rocks or the soil or the perimeter, the mini 18-inch fence? Huh?
No, all of the tree stumps.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Which, we'll talk about that later in the week, I think even tomorrow. But it's interesting. I mean, the detail is just amazing in this film.
Right.
You know, the fact that again, fresh spoiler for anyone who hasn't read it, who hasn't seen this yet, but in tomorrow's episode, we're going to see people hauling trees, and it's possible that these are the trees that they cut down, which you'd think would also be strange that they would wait until the day that all the prisoners show up to cut down all the trees on the inside of the perimeter.
True.
But maybe not. Who knows? But my first thought was when I first saw them, I thought maybe the rocks, and then I took a closer look, and I realized that they're all tree stumps. So when you're walking around the perimeter, you have to be really careful not to fall on a tree stump because they didn't uproot them completely. Maybe it's a way to keep the prisoners on their guard all the time and not trying to run around in the middle of the night because you might stumble across a tree stump. Yes, I'm sorry, John. In the novel?
No. In the novel, they make mention that they had periodically placed microphones to... or seismic counters to measure, to detect if there was any underground digging. You don't really see them, but I think they were around the inner perimeter as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't see them.
Do either of you have anything else to say about this minute?
I noticed they've both got wedding rings on. I would assume they would be, sometime after they're shot down, they would have been captured or maybe bartered away or... Or did pilots fly with their wedding rings? I don't know, but if they've been, hilts appear, and both of them appear to have been in other camps, maybe in prison for a year or so. It's still lucky they've got their pieces of jewelry intact, not stolen or otherwise parted away from them.
Well, Hilt has a watch, too. I don't know if it's this minute you see it or in a later minute, but he's got a watch as well. And I am still standing by that Steve McQueen didn't go to wardrobe, and this is just what he showed up on set wearing, and that's why he's nowhere even close to a uniform.
All right. Do you have anything else for this day?
Nope.
No.
All right. So, John, you want to give everyone your plugs?
Please, everyone, if you like Dirty Harry, the 1971 classic Warner Brothers movie with Clint Eastwood, where he blows the head clean off, you can go to dirtyharryminute.com. Yeah.
That's where all right. Hope you're willing to come back again tomorrow.
Very much, yes. Oh, this movie was edited by Ferris Webster, who later went on to edit a lot of Clint Eastwood movies of the 70s. So there's a tenuous link if you want to go to Dirty Harry Minute. There's a continuity with this film.
Oh, wow. Did you mention it? Did you mention The Great Escape during those minutes?
I did mention Ferris Webster. Yeah, I think so. I'm sure it came up.
Okay. Great.
He didn't edit Dirty Harry, though, so that's a shame.
Can't have it all. All right, so anyone, if you want to, you can send us an email to thegreatminute@gmail.com. You can go to our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. You can find us on Twitter, greatescapemxm. And you can also get in touch with us via Facebook group, The Cooler. You can also, please, we'd appreciate if you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that you may use. We'll see you again tomorrow. Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.